Hello and welcome to the pilot episode of a brand new podcast from Radio City Talk's Liverpool Live programme. My name's Mick Coyle, you'll be hearing my voice a lot on this one, alongside my producer Lizzie Doyle. She's a staunch Liverpool fan. Other contributors you're going to hear from, the two Daves, David Sanderson, who's a sports journalist, and Dave Downey as well from the Everton fan show The Blue Room. He's also a broadcaster and producer. On this week's pilot episode, we are going to be having sporting conversations based around last week's news agenda, including who would be in your Premier League All-Star side. What have Everton actually achieved in the last 2 years outside of spending lots of money? Can you guess obscure footballers based on some random clues? And also, how do you keep warm on the terraces when it's absolutely freezing? It's a brand new podcast and also something you can check out as part of Liverpool Live on Radio City Talk, radio station in Liverpool, every weekday from 1:05. It's a pilot episode, so forgive us if everything on here is a little bit ropey. This is The Game's Gone.
Rock, sport and talk.
This is Liverpool Live with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, what has Romelu Lukaku been tweeting in the last 24 hours and can we make a radio feature out of it? Yes, we can absolutely. Me and producer Lizzie are here. We can make a radio feature out of most things. Hello, Lizzie.
Out of anything.
Romelu Lukaku, here's an idea for you guys, meaning us specifically at Liverpool Live and Radio City Talk. The NBA has an All-Star game. Don't you guys think we should organise one in the Premier League? No, but now you've mentioned it, the North versus the South, and the fans vote, what do you think at Premier League and at FA? Winky face, smirky face.
Can I just say he's probably posting this because he thinks he's going to be included when I don't think he makes any of our teams at all.
He's not in my 11.
He's not in mine.
When I've worked it out. Oh, Alan Davis Anderson's here as well.
He's not in mine.
Never
would he be in mine either.
First and foremost, I would go along with this as a game, as a one-off, but it would be so hyped, I would hate it. Like, so if they just said, it's going to take place on Sunday, here are the teams, I'd go,
tickets, £80.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what it would be. It would be like, the greatest game of all time, Premier League All-Star. You know, there'd be terrible hashtags and everything in between.
I've just thought of how you could make it interesting.
What, more interesting than Premier League players leaving their current teams, joining up with other teams and playing together elite Premier League All-Star teams?
You work out, you know, which side of the fence that each club sits on, whether they're a northern team, whether they're a southern team. Because there are teams in the Midlands where you kind of be going, are they north or south? And you would have a definitive line and you are playing for extra points. So the north, if the north wins against the south, then all of the northern teams get extra points. Liverpool, Manchester United, Manchester City, Everton, Burnley, everyone gets an extra 3 points. But if the south wins, Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs, they all get an extra 3 points. So you're actually playing for something that matters.
And if it's a draw, West Brom get 10 bonus points. Just for being on their own.
There you go.
So my team is made up of Spurs, Arsenal, Chelsea versus United, City, Liverpool.
Mm-hmm. That, so is mine.
That's the set. There are no Burnley players involved. Everton, unfortunately, there are no all-stars in
no
the Everton
Umaniass.
Side. I don't think Umaniass is on the bench for me. No, he's not.
I've only done a northern one, and it's just basically Liverpool starting 11.
Oh, Dave!
It's clearly not. I said that for that reaction, and I got the reaction I wanted.
If that's it, Simon Mignolet's name on it.
It doesn't.
Right, you're never coming back on this station.
Yeah, says Karius.
Right. So I'm going to go northern first. Can we all agree that I am right by saying that David De Gea is the best goalkeeper in the north of England?
Yes, he is.
Probably in the world.
I think that's fair enough. So De Gea is in there. Now, I've got a back four. Feel free to shoot me down. I have a problem at left back. I'm going to say that because I look at United and they pick all kinds of different players. Nobody at City's blown me away at left back. I couldn't tell you who the left back is at Burnley at the moment. Leighton Baines has not been at the races for quite some time. I'm going to go with Robertson.
Robertson. We're all agreed.
And I need, because of the nature of my team, very attacking, I just need a couple of real, I don't want to say donkeys, but I need big lads in the centre of defence. So I've gone for the biggest lads that you can get, Kompany and Virgil van Dijk.
And I've gone for those two as well.
I've gone Otamendi, van Dijk.
See, Otamendi might be a better option than van Dijk. I would go, but I would pair the two City players together.
You've got to expect that Kompany is going to be fit, and that's a big, big ask.
Exactly. Kyle Walker.
Yeah.
suspiciously, in the north of England side, but he's my right back.
So we've gone, all of us have basically gone for exactly the same team, apart from Lizzie, who's got Otamendi.
I think Otamendi is a fair shout. I've gone then, because I've got a very attacking side.
Is where you're about to justify playing nine strikers?
I've got somebody in my ear telling me, and it's Dave Downey in my ear telling me, that Company's only played 10 league games this season. It's just like, this game isn't happening, right? This is just an idea about like what might happen. Right, so because I've got such an attacking lineup, and you're going to get to me front 18 that I've got going, I've gone for a defensive but also linking midfielder. So Fernandinho, just sit there, pick up the ball, marshal that back four, and don't mess it up. Fernandinho.
I'm playing five strikers, so it's fine.
Are you going Fernandinho? Are you crossing out Fernandinho?
No, I've just thought of someone else for me dilemma. I've gone similar, but
have you just looked at mine and changed your mind?
I've seen someone and I've thought, wow. No, mine's Matic. I like Matic. I think he's a good player.
Same job,
good solid player.
Same deal, same job. Yeah. So you're going Matic as well?
No, I'm not playing any central midfielders. I'm not playing any. It's right. just wingers and forwards from now.
Okay, right. So my attacking front looks like this. David Silva with Kevin De Bruyne.
Oh, David Silva.
That's mine.
And then Kevin De Bruyne.
A front three of Alexis Sanchez, Sergio Aguero, Mo Salah.
Mm.
Oh, hang on, Lizzie. Who you just crossed out?
I've made
then?
A decision.
Oh, go on.
So mine is De Bruyne and Silva.
De Bruyne. Oh, David Silva as well, right?
Yep. Salah.
Yep.
On Aguero. And then I've had four names which I've scribbled out, and this was, I'm going to go for Sane.
Ooh.
Leroy Sane.
That's who she saw on mine.
Excellent. And I think he's young, he's exciting, and he can, I think he's brilliant. So I've crossed, because I have Firmino down in terms of he's in the form of his life. Sanchez for being Alexi Sanchez. Sterling has been really good this season, but I had to weigh up, if you ask me, did I want to sign Sterling or Sanchez, I'd go for Sanchez, but Leroy Sané, he gets the final place in mine.
I'm going to tell you something now, and I'm going to justify it as I say it. I'm playing quite an attacking formation here, so I'm going to tell you how it's going to work. De Gea, sweeper keeper, okay? So he's sitting on the edge of his box. In front of him, Vincent Kompany. In front of him, Virgil van Dijk, playing a sort of really deep defensive midfielder, defensive role. I've got Walker, I've got Robertson bombing on. No, let me finish. Yes, literally stood
up the
one
middle
in front of
the
other.
Pitch.
Yeah. I've got Robertson. It won't matter because I'm going to score 200 goals a game. Got Robertson and Walker bombing on. And then
bombing back to defence.
And then we have De Bruyne, Sane, Sanchez and Liverpool's front three because they've scored 62 goals between them.
Yeah, but, so you don't think Aguero probably one of the
Mane.
Highest scoring?
Yeah, but I'm looking at them as a team and those three together are phenomenal.
Okay, on the bench, Omar Nias. Valencia is my right back. He was so I like him.
I haven't done a bench.
Lukaku is on my bench from the north of England, and Firmino's on the bench as well. But Jesus, I've ignored him because he's injured, but he's a good player as well. South, I've gone Lloris in goal. Now, people will shoot me down and they'll go for Courtois.
I've gone Courtois.
Because Lloris is better.
Because Lloris is going to have to face Sanchez, Aguero, Salah, De Bruyne and David Silva, I think he's going to have to save lots of shots. Now, in terms of shot stopping, I like Lloris as a shot stopper, but you've gone for Courtois.
I like Lloris too. It was a toss up, so I went for Courtois.
I'm struggling for centre halves. If I'm absolutely honest, I'm ignoring Chelsea, but I'm going Chelsea fullbacks.
You wouldn't have David Luiz.
No, I've gone for Aspilicueta and Alonso as my fullbacks, and I've gone for Alderweireld and Vertonghen as my centre half pair.
That is my back four. But you say you struggle, but that is, you know,
I would have Luiz in there.
Alderweireld and Vertonghen are a great centre half partnership. I wouldn't knock them at all.
Good, because they're in. So then I've got, and then this is the joy of the south of England. And N'Golo Kante just sits in front of them. Yes please, we'll have that all day long. And then I wonder what I'd written here, because I was thinking Danny Williamson. No, I mean Willian and Son are going to play in my midfield. In front of that, Hazard, Kane and Ozil.
Nice.
Now that's all right, isn't it?
I'd have Hazard, Kane and Aubameyang.
See, Aubameyang's on my bench because he's only been here 10 minutes.
But I think he's...
Who am I missing, Lizzie?
So I have gone same back four, Courtois in goal, Kante in front. Then I've gone Eriksen.
Eriksen's a good
player.
I think
Eriksen is a fantastic
player. Instead of William.
Player.
Don't drop Son. You cannot drop
Son,
the greatest player in the Premier League.
I've got This is the only thing. Is obviously, I've got Eriksen, then I've got Kane up top. And then I've put Son, Hazard and Willian. But I don't know where they're going to go. But they're the names that I've got.
I'm but sorry,
I've
North
got Kante
South.
And Eriksen. And then Kante and Eriksen, yeah. I think Hazard can... in his role can sort of play wherever. You could tuck him in behind Kane. But then Son and Willian have just been exceptional this season. I think to be honest, Son, Hazard and Willian, wherever you put them, are going to have an impact.
So that's
why I've chosen them.
That this is the immovable force meeting the irresistible object, because defensively I would go with my South of England side versus the North. And attacking-wise, I would definitely go for the North with Man City and Liverpool versus the South. Although Mesut Ozil is the greatest of the goal providers, I think, in Europe, and has been for the last 6 years. Harry Kane is probably the best striker in Europe at the moment, and Eden Hazard isn't bad. Willian is playing very well at the moment, and Son is having the season of his life as well. No Courtois for me. Trippier I've left out. Dembele, Fabregas isn't in there. Eriksen I've left out, and I put Aubameyang on the bench as well. Managers, North of England. Obviously,
Pep
Guardiola, and South of England,
probably Pep again.
Pochettino,
yeah.
See, I think Conte, because I think you take Conte out of Chelsea, you remove all these hassles from Abramovich and all that nonsense.
No, Conte.
Suddenly,
he's cool.
Conte.
We'll stick with Conte.
Liverpool Live with Mick Coyle. Rock, sport, and talk. Radio City Talk.
Let me take you back 2 years now. 2 years. 2 years yesterday, where Everton had a new, not owner or chairman, but new majority sharehold of Farhad Moshiri, 49.9%. Let's talk about that now with Dave Downey from the Everton fan show, The Bloom. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Mick.
And Lizzie's here as well.
Hello.
Dave, set this up for us. 2 years ago, you got your billionaire. You got your man. You got your money bags. He spent $250 million on the football club. Yeah. Things didn't necessarily improve. Things may have got worse. You were optimistic at the time, though, right?
When he come in at the time, it was a breath of fresh air. It'd been everything that we'd wanted for a long time, because there was a realisation many years before he did come that we'd need somebody of his wealth to kick on in the Premier League. We were a team that were always associated with punching above our weight every season. You look at the fantastic job David Moyes did, which is, I think, in quite a stark perspective right now, how well he did at the football club without the riches of the teams that he was rubbing shoulders with. And okay, yeah, he never quite got them onto that next level. Everton then became known as the team that was the best of the rest, as in you had your top, well, the traditional top four, and then a top five when Manchester City become wealthy, and then obviously Spurs nowadays are comfortably in that mix as well due to how good of a manager and setup they've got with players. Everton were always the side that come after that. But if you look at the time, Mick, and to give it a bit of context, Everton were rubbing shoulders with Tottenham. It was between those two, and Everton have often finished above Tottenham and Liverpool as well. There were a couple of seasons when Everton finished above Liverpool, but they never quite had the financial clout or the saleable assets to sustain a challenge. And we finished one season in fourth in 2004-05, but that was it. And many regard that as the time we missed the boat to actually plough some investment into this football club. And then we arrive at a point where Farhad Moshiri comes in, and some of the first things he said were really interesting, because he said, you know, gone are the days of doing what Chelsea did with Abramovich or Manchester City did, although they continue to do that, arguably. He was saying that it's about sort of small baby steps in terms of growth and trying to get the club on an even footing, both commercially and on the pitch as well. And I think he'll have learned a lot of lessons in the last 2 years that he didn't necessarily, well, he certainly didn't know by the looks of things when he first started out, and it's been a lot more difficult and challenging than he first thought.
As a Liverpool fan, Leslie, you will know that Everton fans at the time were sort of walking like they were 15 feet high, because this was going to be it, wasn't it? This was going to be the moment.
Rich. That was the time. That was their year. No, they were. Well, they hadn't seen investment like it, even though I think Bill Kenwright has the absolute right intentions for the club. His heart's in the right place. you know, you've got to weigh up it. It's a difficult one for an Everton fan, I think, because you're looking between your heart and your head, and you look at modern football now. And in a way, I know Bill Kenwright can get some stick, but he does have the best of intentions for the club. But you've got to look at, well, to progress, you need money. Unfortunately, that's the way. So when Mascheri come on board, you know, was it 49.9%? So obviously slightly less than Kenwright, but you've got like the best of both worlds. So even as a Liverpool fan, I was thinking that's a great deal
was
for
that,
Everton.
Was that the mistake that was made? Can you take all Everton's problems on the field right now back to the point that Farhad Mascheri didn't buy enough shares in the football club? That actually what has happened in that two-year period is you have the old chairman, as in the ongoing chairman of Everton Football Club, not talking about his age there, in Bill Kenwright, who is running the club as Bill Kenwright would run the club with Bill Kenwright's people. And then you've got a majority shareholder. You've not got a co-owner, or, you know, you've got a majority shareholder who doesn't have that sway, but actually has all, essentially, the clout. So he will want to do things his way without actually having the right to do that or the ability to do it in terms of how the board stacks up and so on and so forth. So is that where you get the issues around uncertainty over who the manager is, who's going to come in, whether or not actually that is a manager that both managers, both chairman and majority shareholder want, that there is a strategy in place which both the chairman and the majority shareholder agree with, that both of them have the same agreement for how to, I don't know, buy a player or to sell a player. Is that where the issue is? Because when Man City got sold out, they didn't keep the old guard on. Franny Lee wasn't still sat there going, I know I've got all this money coming in, but I'll do things my way. When FSG came in, you didn't still have Hicks and Gillette sitting there. You know, do you think you can sort of go back to those moments and go, right, well, that was an issue?
Yeah, most definitely. And I think we've saw the painful, sometimes painful, results of that disharmony. And I think that you've got a massive naivety, I think, on Farhad Mashiri's part to think that you're going to be on the same page as somebody who's had Everton's interest and Everton alone for the past 20-odd years since he acquired the club in 97 from Peter Johnson. Bill Kenwright gets criticised all over the place, and many of those arguments ring true, in my opinion. I think there's times when he's put not his own interests, but the interests of an Evertonian before what would probably make sense and what the club needed, due to his love of the football club. I think Lizzie's absolutely right in what she says about him and the intention, but that intention and what is best don't often marry up, particularly not in football. And I think when you've got Farhad Mascheri coming on board, who is fresh-faced to this environment, I know he had the time at Arsenal, but he's a glorified accountant, to put it in simple terms, who's cash rich. So he's come in, and obviously there's been a naivety on his part that both of these could get on the same page. And I think you'd be a fool to say that that would have an everlasting effect. I think there was obviously going to be a rift in some quarters for decision-making. You see, when you're talking about even down to player signings, whose player is that? Is it the manager? Is it Steve Walsh? The director of football thing has to be a Farhad Mascheri decision, you would think, because there was no evidence of that before he come along. But then you have, like you say, you have the old guard there who are still Evertonians and still have that sentiment. And there's one thing that's really grated on me over the last few years is how sentimental a football club Everton are, because I don't think there's any room for that, or much room for that, in today's modern game. And I think Bill has that feeling about him. For instance, with Wayne Rooney coming back, Farhad Mascheri might well have seen that it was a great commercial opportunity for Everton, as well as him still being a relatively decent player, which is obviously up for debate, whereas Bill would have saw it as a massively sentimental thing, the boy returning home and all that sort
of
thing.
True, but then if you're Farhad Mascheri, what you need to do is, they are right, market Everton around the world based on the fact as we are the side that Wayne Rooney plays for. Now, arguably 6 months into Wayne Rooney being an Everton player, I'm not aware of Everton and the Wayne Rooney name being sold around the world. Correct. In that regard.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely right. They've missed the boat many occasions. You think of Tim Howard, and aside from my personal views on him, he was a world name in terms of what he did in the USA. There's massive marketing opportunities there if you approach it right. And I don't think it's far beyond the realms of common sense what you could do in terms of creating revenue and having a niche with him and a USP and all those sorts of things. And Tim Cahill similarly as well. Australia's hero, their talisman. He still is to this day. And you look at the fraud that was kicked up when he was gone and signed for Millwall last month. Everton completely missed the boat with those opportunities and getting out of those places. They had people at the forefront of it. They had figures and figureheads who could go and sell the club perfectly well. Figureheads that I think the likes of Chelsea and other teams who were trying to get on that level of a Man United, say, they don't have. They have to go and spend money in these countries. Everton had a freebie by having a couple of players.
Pacer
who really
have
good.
Come on board. Sport Pacer have come on board. Far and wide. USM and Usmanov came on board as well.
But that word naivety seems to crop up all the time, Mick. And I think that's what it's been since Moshiri's come on board. I think you look in every aspect of the football club, from its commercial partners. I mean, you've seen the faux pas that Sport Pacer had earlier this year in congratulating Arsenal when they beat us 5-2 at Goodison, and they're our main shirt sponsors. It's been quite laughable, really, the way some of the things have happened. And I really hope Moshiri himself is taking stock of all this after 2 years. And there are rumours that he has the share option after 2 years to acquire the controlling stake in the football club. But I don't necessarily think that's too much of a big thing, because many people are of the opinion, and I'm probably one of them, that the old guard need to move on and have that sort of clean sweep, scrub the decks, do everything you can to start from ground up and start building this football club again, because it's just been a mismatch, and it's been a quagmire of false dawns, false hopes, people pulling in different directions, and that includes players and it includes management, and includes the ideology. And you can't tell me what Everton are right now, what direction they're going in, or their identity. All of that needs to start.
School of science, Dave. School of science.
But you laugh at that, and I'd laugh at that now, because it's a well used and overcoined term now.
Isn't it now an academy?
Well, so's the people's
free school of science,
but so's the people's club thing as well. That needs to go. All of it needs to be washed away.
Can I just ask?
And Everton
needs
to start building as a modern day football club.
Obviously, as a Liverpool fan and you a diehard Everton fan, you say all this, but are you prepared? You know, I have to. As a diehard Liverpool fan, I look at my club now and I'm completely detached from my club, whether it's ticket prices, whether it's the owners. Our owners don't care about our fans. Okay, we have tons of money. That's great. Yeah, it buys you the top four place at the minute. It's not getting us Liverpool any cups, but you're looking at a clean slate, and I get that, because you're fed up of where your club is at the moment, and obviously you don't think you're keeping up with modern football, which I don't think Everton are at the moment. I think that's a fair point, but I just think, as a Liverpool fan,
what I will, it is what you have to sacrifice.
And what I would give to have someone at the club who, at quite a high level, who actually still cares, maybe making Ken Wright obviously still a bit of a figurehead for the club. I think if you go for a clean slate, you're risking losing everything that you love, and you're risking losing the closeness that you've got with the club. You don't want to become what Liverpool fans are, which is a customer.
But that's the dilemma in modern day football, particularly for a club like ours, who are one of the traditional ones, is that do you want that sentiment? I mean, look at the situation now with Sam Allardyce. People are saying, get Mikel Arteta in. Mikel Arteta's never managed a football club in his life. He might be one of the big talents out there, but it's a massive risk. People are just saying that because he played for Everton, and that reason alone. And I think we've gone too far that way. And being stuck in the old times, living, you know, it's a digital world and we're still playing analog. I think that's a decent way of putting it. And I think there's a way to do it better than what Liverpool do in terms of embracing where you're from, the heritage of the club and its fans. Well, of course,
better than Liverpool.
No, but there are better ways of doing all that. And I think Everton need to learn from what Liverpool have done, how they manage fans, the disconnect you've just mentioned there. I think they're in a good place to do that. You look at the consultation for the new ground. That's incorporated everybody's views, or so they say, but whether it's a propaganda thing or not, it has won hearts and minds in terms of asking fans what they want to see at the new ground. So I think we're in a decent position to do that, but we need to go far, far much more into the unknown. It's the unknown for this football club, what other clubs are doing. And, you know, you've got the pieces in place. Sorry, you've got the pieces. You need to put them in place.
Well, let me do this, Lizzie. What do you think is Sam Allardyce's points per game after 16 games in charge? How many points per game does Sam Allardyce get? Andy Hunter from The Guardian's got this, by the way, on The Guardian Sport website.
Well, it's got to be one or less,
1.3 or something,
1.37. We'll round that up to 1.4.
Ronald Koeman's was over 1.5, I think.
It was 1.48. In the
just
end.
One and a half.
We'll round that up to 1.5. Roberto, Bobby.
Better.
With his blue suede shoes, 1.56 points per game.
That's a good finish in the Premier League, that, you know.
Well, it is, because what is that? It's about 50-odd points, minimum of 55 points, I would suggest, Mick. But Martinez, obviously, with the caveat of having a 72-point season and two rubbish ones. So, but yeah, I mean, Allardyce, I think, is increasingly looks like he's on borrowed time. I don't think it's any coincidence that this is coming out. This news is being fed to the press about Farhad Moshiri looking for the successor right now, given the fact that it is season ticket renewal time. It's when the club needs to get all of its people signed up for the next season. It's the easy time to do this sort of thing.
There's some good stuff on the Guardian website about this Andy Hunter, who basically says, well, this is what Moshiri's done, this is the money that he's done, and then it just goes, but then... Yeah. But then the football happened.
Rock, sport and talk. This is Liverpool Live with Mick Coyle. Radio City Talk.
12 minutes past one. My name's Mick. David Sanderson's in the studio. Lizzie Doyle's in the studio too, wearing a scarf.
Hello.
Just keep them warm.
It's 20 degrees in this studio right now.
Yeah, but outside is minus 55 or something.
Do you know how Steve's doing the show at 3 and he's also doing breakfast tomorrow?
Mm.
Do you think they'll have that thing? Have you ever had the thing where you fall asleep in like about 1 o'clock in the afternoon and then you wake up and it's dark and you go, what time is it? And you look at your watch and it's like, it says 5 and you're like, is it 5 at night? Is it 5 in the morning? I don't, people are going to be doing that. They're going to be turning the radio on and going, hang on, what day is it? Is it Friday? I don't know where I am. There you go.
Danny Rose Jones on Twitter is Brad Jones's wife.
Okay.
Brad Jones, formerly of Liverpool. She just tweeted a picture of herself at the game last night that Feyenoord were playing in. -8 for the game last night with a feeling temperature of -16 because of the ice wind. Incredible support in this brutal weather. I presume she's talking about the Feyenoord fans, not just herself. The hubby did amazing. Heart at Brad Jones 1 at Feyenoord. So Chorley had a game the other night, which was a semi-final of the Lancashire Trophy final, which gets played at the Macron Stadium. Chorley often get there because they're the best non-league, arguably, non-league Lancashire side. So it's quite good because they get to win a trophy and stuff like that. So it's quite good and you get to go into a proper stadium, although it's the Macron, yes, okay. But it was so cold, the game got called off. And you know what? I was relieved. I was relieved because I had made a decision in my head that it was too cold to go and watch the football. I don't know about you, but sometimes when you look outside and you think, oh, it's a bit cold. So you have the things that you wear to go outside, hat, your scarf, your gloves and so on and so forth. But there's a cold which grips you when you are stood or sitting at a football stadium, which is a cold like no other.
Yes.
So you got to make precautions. Now, Danny in this particular picture is wearing, I will imagine, a fake fur coat, a scarf, but she's not got any gloves on, but she's got boots that go way over her knee.
No gloves.
No gloves. Oh. -16. But I have now long johns.
Oh. Yes, good shout.
Do you get sewn into them at the start of winter?
Basically, I need to. Long johns, which are, they're not the, you know, the cotton ones, like the Victorian style. They're like a fleece.
Right.
Nice.
They go underneath everything. And they are like the bare minimum now. So yeah. This game's been rearranged, by the way, for next week, where it won't be quite as cold. But I had thought, you know what, it is too cold to go and stand and watch football.
Is that just at the football you wear them? Or do you wear them? Are you wearing them now?
I'm not wearing them now.
Because today is a classic day where they would be really useful in this office.
But then it's conflicted. Oh, I was going to say it's conflicted because you come in and it's warm and then you get really hot.
But it's not
And then
warm.
You're in your shorts and T-shirts.
The only other time I've worn them is walking up mountains when wind is a factor. So yeah. That or standing. Because I always think the other thing is, if it's a bit cold, the first half is all right. Because like,
oh, it's the second half and you've got to come out.
Because the thing is, what happens is, that's what it is. The first half hour, you go, it's all right. And sometimes if you had a drink before the game, you might have the old beer jacket. That might just tie you over. But that starts to wear off. And it gets to half time. 10 minutes before half time, you're thinking, well, I can get inside in a bit and I'll go and get
in the queue, get a hot drink. Hot dog and overall
pie. Hot dog. And you think, well, that's going to be all right. And then you come out for the second half and then it hits you again. And then it's just you stood there for 45 minutes. And it shouldn't feel like an endurance event. But sometimes I get so distracted by how cold I am. It really spoils the game.
It makes a difference, though, the stadium and where you sat. Because there's certain stadiums and stadia where it's ridiculous how cold it gets. But then there's other parts. Like, if you've ever been at the back of the Kop, doesn't matter how cold the day is.
It's
like an oven. It's ridiculous.
Well, I remember I think it was the Derby, not the FA Cup one, the one in the league. That was, I am right. That was really cold, if I remember correctly, because I remember having to put...
Friday night game, that one? FA Cup?
No, not the FA Cup one, the one before that, the league game.
Right.
I remember having to put tights underneath my jeans, and then a top, and then a jumper, then a coat, a scarf, gloves. And it wasn't even this cold, but it was that football cold where your mum goes, oh, you'll need more than that. And I go, no, I won't. And then I walk out the door, pause, and think... Mums know best when it comes to weather, and you go in and put your bigger coat on. And
Tony Barrett did a Match of My Life the other day on Steve's show, and he was talking about going to Coventry on the last game of the season to watch Liverpool win the league. Or Liverpool already won the league on a away game. It was the hottest day of the year, but his mum said, "Take a jumper. You're not going." And apparently, if you see the winning goal on YouTube now, his jumper is thrown over the hoardings.
The thing is, when you go to these games and it's really really cold, and you dress up with all your different layers on, it gives you that opportunity to say to people, God, it's cold, and you know what? I'm wearing two T-shirts, two jumpers, a scarf, a hat and gloves, and I can still feel the cold. It's still cold. I wish I had my ski mask on.
Did you watch the Spurs game yesterday? So obviously Wembley is huge, and I know they don't use the whole Wembley, the whole capacity, but there was hardly anyone there, and I was thinking... The ones that were there must have been about 20,000 out of 90,000, but it was white. And I was thinking the last thing I would want to do, I am a diehard Liverpool fan, but if you said to me, Rochdale at home, -10, £20 for me to hit, I'd try and sell it, and if not, I'd get
Quasi.
Quasi
fan.
Did you hear the story about what happened last night, by the way, with the VAR before the game? Have you heard this story?
No.
So, obviously, there was quite a lot of snow in the air. It was quite cold. So they painted the lines blue. They painted the lines at Wembley blue. But then they ran a test on the VAR and it didn't work. So about 20 minutes before the game, they painted all the lines white again, which is why the lines, if you look at them, were a sort of off baby blue colour. True story.
That's interesting. So what, the camera couldn't pick it up as a line?
They painted the lines blue in advance of the game. And then when they set the VAR system up and tried to run it, VAR just couldn't detect the lines. So VAR doesn't like the colour blue, apparently.
So in a ultimate test of my hipster credentials, when provided with the opportunity to watch Spurs versus Rochdale in the greatest cup competition on earth, I watched on Sky Sports Mix, Lazio versus Milan.
Wow.
And the Coppa Italia... It was the worst.
Which
it was AC. The worst game of football I have honestly seen in at least 3 years.
Did you watch Manchester United versus Sevilla the other night?
No. It was one of those games where, and Milan are on a great run at the moment, and Gattuso's in charge. So you think, oh, this is going to have something about it.
Didn't know that.
Nothing about it at all. Like, literally, no quality whatsoever. There was the best player, right? Or the player that I noticed the most, right? Was Lucas, because he was playing in front of the back four and just getting the ball and just kicking it to a player. That player would then try and take somebody on, but not do, or would try and take somebody on, win a throw-in, and then nothing would come of the throw. And you know, just one of those games where the rhythm, and you're going, well, this is just not good. And I watched it with my wife, and I thought, she's going to click on at some point. And after about 50 minutes, she just went, is that AC Milan or Inter Milan? And I thought, the fact that she hasn't even noticed that this is the worst game of football that I have ever... It even went to extra time.
Did you watch it?
No, I stopped watching it. I stopped watching it after 106 minutes. I was like, no, this is... You know what you're thinking? I'm not enjoying this at all.
Why did you watch it to 90 minutes?
I know, but you know when you sometimes think, well, it's football, isn't it? So it's fine.
Do you know,
something will happen. There'll be a great moment. When it gets to about 75 minutes, it's a cup game, second leg, nil-nil. You're thinking, something's going to happen. And when it happens, it's going to go off big time. Then nothing happens.
So what happened?
I didn't even check. I cared so little, I didn't even check the result when I got up on social media this morning.
I remember many moons ago, we're talking 10 years ago now, I was in Rome. And went on a little weekend break to Rome, and I discovered, no, it wasn't a weekend break, it was a midweek break to Rome. And I discovered at the time, Roma were playing Valencia in the Champions League, and it was like the last round of games in the Champions League. And I thought, you know what, I'm only here for a few days, why not? I'll go to the game. Got to the game, really excited. There was one result that meant both sides basically went through. And it was Roma needed to win 1-0. Roma scored after about 3 minutes. the worst game of football I've ever seen, because no one did anything. No one attacked. They just passed the ball back and forth to each other. It was ridiculous. But, you know, it was an experience.
Was it?
You saved yourself time and effort. It went to pens.
Did it?
Who do you think won on pens?
So I would say with that side...
Where was it? Milan?
Lazio.
No, it was at Lazio. And that's the other thing. It was in the... I don't want to say Dele Alpi.
It's Stad Olimpico.
Olimpico. It's huge and there's no one...
It's like the old Wembley.
And it was like a third full or something like that. So I would say with that attacking lineup, I would say... I'm going to say that Lazio sparked it.
No.
Did they not?
AC 5-4 on pens.
So only one missed pen as well.
By the way, just before you go, you know when they say in the weather, -4, but it'll feel like -12. Well, if it feels like -12, is it not just -12? You know
what
I mean?
It's wind though, isn't it? If it was still, you wouldn't feel the cold as much.
But if you went into a shop and you went, "How much is that?" and they went, £1, but it'll feel like 12 quid. Would you go, "Well, is it £1 or is it 12 quid?
Liverpool Live with Mick Coyle. Rock, sport, and talk. Radio City Talk.
It's been cold this week, but let us warm the cockles of your hearts with David Sanderson, Dave Downey with our sporting conversation.
Hi.
Afternoon, gents.
Hi, Mick.
So I was reminded of a footballer yesterday, and I thought, there's a good footballer. There's a good footballer. And I bet you they've got a decent trophy cabinet. And I checked, and I was flabbergasted. Flabbergasted. My gast was flabbered by the success of this individual. So I've put on social media the trophy cabinet of this individual, right?
All right, let me see this.
I'm going to read it out.
Go on.
Whose trophy cabinet is this? 3 Premier League titles, 3 FA Cups, a League Cup, a Community Shield, a Champions League, and a Europa League, plus 100 international caps. Sean says, I thought it was Lampard, but I'm 1 FA Cup out. Sean, I know you're a big fan of Chelsea, so you'd have been following that one. See, Jay says, Rooney, no.
I was going to say Ashley Cole.
It's not Ashley Cole.
Evra.
It's not Evra.
I'm thinking it must be an Arsenal link. I'm thinking 3 FA Cups. That's the first place you go to lately, isn't it? Champions League.
My clue on this one, that I think this is probably the most unfashionable footballer that you could imagine. You know, like Eden Hazard will be on the front cover of FIFA, or like Ronaldo will sell Pepsi Max or something. This guy would never be asked. He'd be like a welly model or something like that, or like, I don't know, like tractors or the latest combine harvester. That's the sort of thing that he'd be advertising. So he doesn't have that, the look of the modern professional footballer.
Is it a James Milner type?
No.
Is he still playing?
I think he's still playing, but he's not in the Premier League anymore. He's definitely at the end of his career.
English?
No.
That is really tough. Give us his position, Mick.
So he's played in various positions, but he would play at the back.
Please don't say Phil Neville.
It's not Phil Neville.
He must have a similar record.
Phil Neville won't have a Europa League, really.
Oh, of course not.
Has a Europa League and a Champions League.
Yeah, you see.
Europa League, so United won it recently, haven't they?
Yeah. It could be, he could have a Liverpool link.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a Liverpool link.
Is it a United link then?
It's not a United link.
Wow. So it has to be Chelsea.
It's a Chelsea player, and or a former Chelsea player.
It has to be...
Unfashionable.
Very unfashionable.
Gary Cahill.
No, more unfashionable than Gary Cahill.
Just name Chelsea defenders.
3 Premier League titles, 3 FA Cups, a League Cup, a Community Shield, a Champions League and a Europa League. 100 international
Paulo Ferreira.
Caps.
That's a great guess, though. That is the type of player you're talking about here, isn't it?
No, because I think as soon as you get it, you think, actually, no, he is a brilliant player.
What was the fella he went to Real Madrid? What's
Osana
his name?
Diarra?
No. Was going bald, but kept the island.
Raul Morales?
No. Frank Leboeuf?
No.
Cavalier. Europa League under Benitez.
Rafa, yep. He might have scored the winner. Did he score the winner in that game? I think he might have scored the winner in that game.
David Luiz scored in that game, didn't he?
Oh, wow. This is awful.
It really is.
Yeah. And to be honest, I'm happy to
Branislav Ivanovic.
Branislav Ivanovic. Oh,
wow.
You're honestly saying that he'd be on a Combine Harvester magazine?
Oh,
he was a star, Branislav Ivanovic. He was one of the best defenders in the Premier League for such a long time.
No, right. You show me a picture where somebody asked Branislav Ivanovic to advertise, like,
I don't know, like an energy drink.
Do you know what's funny about this? I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I think Chelsea won like the team of the year or something one season. And there's a video of the players after it with their acceptance speech, and it's Hazard, John Terry, David Luiz, and him. And they ask him a question, he tries to talk English, and Eden Hazard just breaks down and starts laughing all over the place. Honestly, Google it, it's so funny.
It was actually, that was the incident that I saw online. That was it? It made me think, actually, Branislav Ivanovic was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, well, he went on, he scored loads of headed goals, didn't he?
He was on loan at AC Milan. He scored two in the semi-final Champions League against Liverpool, didn't he, that season?
He did score the winning goal, by the way, in the Europa League final in May 2013 as Chelsea beat Benfica 2-1. That was a stoppage time winner. Branislav Ivanovic.
Yeah. I'd have had him at any point in his career.
Absolutely.
Class act.
Have him and Vidic as centre-backs.
Reminds me a little bit of Azpilicueta these days, Mick. Versatile defender who you just know is going to be 7, 8, 9 out of 10 every single week.
I think that's the consistency. I think he's at Zenit now. Whether or not he's still playing, I'm not quite so sure.
He was a fantasy football staple. Oh, yeah. You just put him in there. Goal-scoring central defender. He kept clean sheets.
How's Big Sam feeling at the moment? I've been listening to him in the news, and he seems a little bit down in the dumps.
I've tried to veer away from hearing what he said this morning, actually, Mick, so you'll have to enlighten me.
Clip number one, Sam Allardyce talking about the weather. We're going to hear about it, talking about the weather.
It's not been very good for preparation ahead of the Burnley game. They've not been able to train, and they weren't really planning on doing any today either.
Did he not say, the one sort of remnant that I've seen from somebody on social media is that they have to keep it on the floor if they wanted to train today?
Let's have a listen to that remnant right now.
We're unlikely to get on the pitch today because of the wind today. It's so fierce that we'd barely be able to keep the ball on the floor in terms of, you know, we'd have to have somebody to put the finger on it to keep it still.
Oh, yeah, there was a bit of a laugh there, but I think he realised at the point in which he laughed that he realised he just said we're struggling to keep the ball on the floor.
Yeah.
That's the moment, isn't it?
But surely as well, I do know because I've been there, Finch Farm has indoor pitches as well that are 3G, which I'm sure they could train on.
He's also been talking about Elikim Mangala, who's injured, probably won't play for the Blues again, but will stick around.
I think that his injury is going to be a bit more lengthwise than first thought. I think that they've reassess the scans and they've seen there's a little bit more damage than first expected, so I think it's highly unlikely we'd see him again this season.
Now, let him off for that one, because of course he's talking about a player and, you know, potential risk to
shame
the career and so
himself.
On and so forth. But for a guy who has been brought into Everton, right, to save them from relegation and did it almost straight away, and to be paid a handsome amount of money, would he not be a little bit just more affable with people? I don't know, there was a real sense in his post-match press conferences.
He doesn't care, Mick, that's why. He is there to be paid out. That is his purpose in life. He is there to just carry us through to the end of the season.
Yeah, but that
have you got the quote of what he said? I'd tell a lie, I did see one today and it made me blood boil that I didn't want to read anymore. The one about him and the speculation regarding his future. He said, I will be here beyond this season if I win games. Something else along the lines of, we're doing a good job and I'm surprised by the speculation. You've won, you won three games in 13, mate.
Yeah, but his job description was clearly make us safe.
Well, yeah. But
and he's pretty much done that.
Well, no, he hasn't, because, first of all, we're only 7 points above the drop zone. The reason we won't go down is because the traffic between us and the drop zone. But also, when he took over, was on the back of straight away David Unsworth getting a 4-0 win against West Ham, which put us 6 points clear of the relegation zone and into the relative safety of 13th place or something like that. Since he's been there, he's only improved that margin by 1 point.
£6 million a point seems like a deal.
So, you know, him saying he's done a good job, I beg to differ. As somebody who's suffered from travelling to watch one of his away performances and then him come out afterwards and say that we need to be more bored and having not registered a shot on goal, I think is one of the most disgraceful things I've ever heard, Mick, and I can't wait for him to leave.
Do you not think that there's an element, and I'm talking about, you know, his attitude in this and the way he's coming across, but actually he could essentially say, right, let's relax a little bit now and let's try and play some football, let's try and do something. I think that's maybe the thing that Everton fans are thinking, well, the threat of relegation, although you're suggesting might be there, is not really there given the amount of traffic and how poor the sides below them actually are. That actually Everton fans might just see a little bit of bit of fun, a little bit of something, to, you know, a little bit of experimentation.
To be fair, I hate passing judgment on other teams' managers when it comes to things like saying he's the wrong fit for the club or something like that, because I know how frustrating it is when someone does that about your club and you know your club better than anyone else and you sit there and you watch it, and when the manager's not the right fit, you know they're not the right fit. See, Roy Hodgson for Liverpool, never the right fit, never going to work. Liverpool fans saw it. Everyone else said, oh, you give him some more time. So I will never sit there going, oh, you should give Big Sam more time. What you have to say about Big Sam is there's a bit of a theme developing with Sam Allardyce. Newcastle. What happened there? It all went belly up because of the style of football. West Ham, he kept them up. It was fine. Mm. The fans hated the football. Everton, going to keep them up. The fans hate the football.
Yeah. Well, look, one of the most worrying aspects about that, Dave, is it was put to me yesterday, and I think it actually rings true. If you have a look at these teams that he's managed, the seven Premier League or the six other Premier League clubs he's managed, the season after he's left,
they've gone down.
They've gone really, really bad.
Dave, see, this is why you can't let him go.
But that's not me championing him staying on, so that doesn't happen. That's me thinking the detrimental effect he has on the team short term and the cost it's going to take to fix this. And the thing for me, the Cenk Tosun thing, Mick, is...
That's peculiar.
You can't legislate for that when he is... actively said himself that he wanted him as a player. He wanted him when he was at Crystal Palace as well. He's actually intimated, and yet then says he's no good and can't adjust to the weather. God knows what he's doing today, by the way. He probably flew back home to Turkey, given what Allardyce has said about him not liking the cold weather in England.
We're out of time. Dave has just jumped in on the last second with his guess. Clinton Morrison. It's not Clinton Morrison.
Radio City Talk stalwart, Clinton Morrison.
Adam Kavanagh, though, he jumps in. Branislav Ivanovic. Correct, Adam was there. We got one person who got the correct answer.
Yeah, Adam
good
was
show.
Definitely
there you go.
Listening to this.
You can see him advertising wellies. You see what I mean? Like, yeah. Just like
beige umbrellas.
Yeah, yeah.
Serbian swimwear.
Liverpool Live with Mick Coyle.
Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.
Radio City Talk.